United States. Lexington. The Challenger. Shirley Chisholm, the first black woman to run for president, taught a lesson in making political change.
A cynic might gaze at the photograph and sigh that nothing changes in American life. A black woman, a candidate for president, stands before a crowd with a determined look on her face, above a poster extolling a woman's right to choose abortion. "Defend the right," it reads in part. The photograph in black and white is from 1972. It hangs in an exhibition at the Museum of the City of New York about Shirley Chisholm, the first black woman to seek the nomination of a major party. An idealist, however beleaguered, might instead see an image that captures what it takes to make change in American life. Unlike this year, when Kamala Harris, as the Democratic nominee, is running neck and neck with former President Donald Trump, no one had any hope then that Chisholm, the first black woman to serve in Congress, had a chance of winning the Democratic nomination, let alone the presidency. Even she didn't. Instead, she saw herself, as she put it, as a catalyst, pushing against sexism and racism to expand Americans' idea of what was just and what should be possible. "I ran," Chisholm wrote in The Good Fight, her account of the campaign, "because someone had to do it first." She lost that race, but more than half a century on is still gaining ground in the one she really cared about. She opened up a portal for many to follow, says Yvette Clark, a congresswoman whose district in Brooklyn, New York, contains part of Chisholm's old one, and who can remember, back when she was seven, the excitement in her home about Chisholm's candidacy. "If she didn't have the courage to take on the battle," Clark adds, "who knows when we would have come to this day." A documentary about Chisholm from 2004 captures her philosophy and her fierceness. "Don't forget to study hard," she instructs a group of black children. "I'm paving the way for you, so don't disappoint me." In 2019, Ms. Harris told The Griot, a news site, that she stood on Chisholm's shoulders, and that her example taught that you claim that podium as yours, and you don't ask anybody permission. Ms. Harris has not stressed the precedent-setting nature of her candidacy, emphasising Americans' needs rather than her and their chance to make history. Chisholm, who died in 2005, did not have the option. A new hat, rather a bonnet, was tossed into the Democratic presidential race today, Walter Cronkite said on CBS when she declared that she was running. For her part, Chisholm said she was the candidate of the people of America. Like Ms. Harris, whose father is from Jamaica, Chisholm, born in Brooklyn 100 years ago next month, had Caribbean roots. Her mother was a native of Barbados and her father of British Guyana. He worked as an unskilled labourer and she as a seamstress, and to save enough to house and educate their growing family, they sent young Shirley and her two sisters off to Barbados in 1928 to live with family for 7 years. Chisholm ascribed her success partly to the strict British education she received there. It also accustomed her to the idea of black people in authority, and probably accounted for her rat-a-tat elocution, her habit of speaking of herself in the third person, and, though she never weighed much more than 100 pounds, her intimidating, regal bearing. Gloria Steinem, an ally, once said her decision to wear a dress rather than blue jeans to the first press conference of the National Women's Political Caucus, or NWPC, which Chisholm co-founded, was entirely due to Shirley Chisholm, of whom she was always afraid. Chisholm graduated from Brooklyn College and became a nursery school teacher, then director of a nursery school. She involved herself in Democratic politics, dominated in Brooklyn by white Irish-American men, and eventually helped found an insurgent group to elect black candidates. In 1964, she became the second black woman elected to the New York State Assembly, and then, in 1968, the first elected to Congress. Her legislative experience turned Chisholm into a militant who saw American politics as a beautiful fraud. political organisations protected the powerful, she concluded, and white or black, male or male, alternatives were scant, politicians put their party first. Of my two handicaps, being female put many more obstacles in my path than being black, she wrote in her memoir, titled after her slogan, Unbought and Unbossed. She saw America as racist all the way through, a place where a mere accident of pigmentation carried terrible weight. I can feel in myself sometimes an anger that wants only to destroy everything in its path, she wrote. Yet she believed the American system was so flexible there was almost no limit to its possibility for reform. I love America not for what she is, she wrote in The Good Fight, but for what she can become. In her era, whose echoes seem to be growing louder even as it recedes in living memory, young Americans, newly conscious of racial inequities, anxious about economic dislocation brought on by new technology, radicalized by war abroad, disappointed in their elders, seemed certain to demand profound change even as they aged. That's what she thought, anyway. The Democratic field was crowded with white men, ranging from stalwart liberals such as Hubert Humphrey to the segregationist George Wallace. Chisholm ran a shoestring campaign that relied almost entirely on volunteers. Shut out of a debate, she got a court order for equal time on television. She beat several serious contenders, and though she accumulated 152 delegates, that was not enough to extract the policy commitments she hoped for from the nominee, George McGovern. Most of the otherwise male congressional black caucus chose not to support her, and even the NWPC deserted her for McGovern, though in the end he did not deliver the abortion rights plank they wanted in the party platform. That struggle would continue into the future, too.